Roots Race and Culture is made possible in part by the contributions to PBS Utah from listeners like you. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. You're listening to Roots, Race, and Culture, a new podcast from PBS Utah.
If you like what you hear, we hope you'll subscribe, leave us a review, and share with your friends.
All right, now let's get this thing started.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to Roots, Race, and Culture, a new show on PBS Utah where we bring you into candid conversations about shared cultural experiences. My name is Lonzo Liggins.
And I'm Daynor Gerald. Today, we're going to discuss how diversity, or the lack thereof, in religious art impacts our lives, our culture, and our very understanding of humanity.
Wow.
It's a great show.
Yeah, man. It's going to be really awesome. We've got two wonderful guests here today. To my left here is Laura Hurtado. Laura, would you introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm the executive director of the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art.
Awesome. Wow, that is a nice title. I'm excited
fancy
to hear what you have
title
to say. Bringing out the big guns today. All right. And to our right, Melissa, please introduce yourself.
I'm Melissa Chikumba Boggs, and I'm a fine artist, and I graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Arts from BYU.
Sweet. Yes. Yeah, just some amazing art. I'm excited to see that today.
Yes.
This is actually a really exciting show. We're going to be able to see some neat things and talk about some cool things. But first, let's talk about some historical stuff.
Yeah, put a perspective on this thing.
Let's start with you, Laura. I mean, I wanted to hear about some of these key points when we're analyzing some of the historical perspectives in religious art. Can you break that down for us?
Yeah, well, I guess I want to narrow the question a little bit, because I think within the realm of what we're talking about is really the historical perspective of Christian art. You know, there's lots of religious art out there. And I think so much of our understanding of Christian art comes from a Euro-Western European tradition. And that has inherently a cultural bias and even a racial bias on how the work was constructed and who constructed it and who authored it. And that bias has implications in which it writes people into history or it writes people out.
Okay. I know. What's funny is that because I grew up Christian, right? And when I, up until probably about my mid-20s, when I would pray, I would envision like a white guy. I'd envision the sort of carpenter-esque looking guy with a beard, the Passion of the Christ guy. That's who I envision. And I had to like wake up and be like, wait, hold on. Is this the guy that I'm envisioning? Is that actually how he looks? Or is that just, you know, in our little Western hemispheres, how we view that?
Well, so, I wonder about that sometimes. I wonder if imperialism or colonization had an impact on this, because, for example, we have an image of a Christ that's very much like what you are describing, a very Romanesque looking image of Christ, and you look at his nose and skin color, and to me that's
the guy. That's the guy that I saw when I prayed.
That does not show a Middle Eastern person, right? Yeah. And so maybe that's a little bit about what you're talking about.
Yeah, I think that there's inherently in how images were made reflects the sort of colonial or imperialist practice and who was creating them or who was authorized or to make work, who were the decision makers, who were the patrons, who had the money, who had the influence. All of those sort of socioeconomic structures were at play in terms of creating those images. And Lonzo, you and I were talking about an artwork where a Christian Yankowski piece, it's a video piece called Casting Jesus, where it's a Vatican art critic and a Vatican priest, and they're sort of auditioning the role of Christ for a work of art. Mm-hmm. And ultimately the person they choose is a Florentine. And they're like, oh, it looks like this Florentine, it looks like a Guido Reni, which is a painting. What they had in mind was not like, oh, this looks, he right. looks Middle Eastern, or this looks true to the historic fact. In their minds, they were praying to Italian Renaissance paintings or depictions of that.
I would love to hear your perspective on this, Melissa.
So, Melissa's changing it. She's we're going to change this. You know, we're going to make this different.
Give us your opinion about this whole history.
Yeah, I agree with Laura. I think we do have a very limited idea of what Christ looks like, of what God looks like, and it is based off of this colonial mindset that we have, and it's been passed down generation after generation. And
one of the things that I've heard a lot in conversations among Black people is that, you know, we have to decolonize our minds, right? Mm-hmm. Because that artwork is so powerful, right? Yeah. We have one more image, a historical image of Christ. So this is him going into Jerusalem, and there are more people in the artwork, right? So you would think, okay, this is the Middle East and you have Christ, but then there's, I think, one person who has olive skin color in this image. In fact, there's like a blonde baby there and the apostles. And it's another example of like, is this an accurate description of what these people really looked like? And does that matter? And that's the question I really want you to say. Does it matter what that artwork that we see looks like? How does that impact us?
Oh, it totally matters because I grew up with a religious background as well.
What's your religious background?
I'm LDS.
Okay.
So
okay.
Growing up as a child, I saw these images factual and no one corrected them. Mm-hmm. So growing up, I'm like, okay, this is how it is and this is what it is. And I'm going to believe whoever's telling me this because they know more and they're above me. So I'm growing up thinking, I'm like, all these people are white and God's white. And if God's white, that means when I go to heaven, or to be more like God, I need to be closer to whiteness. Mm-hmm, and right. It didn't
yes.
leave any room for my culture or other people's culture, because it's saying only this ethnicity or this religion
has God in them.
Yeah, yeah has right, God right. in them, and it doesn't leave. You can't see the divinity within yourself.
Right.
Here's what I want to know. No, go ahead. I'm sorry, Lauren.
I want to jump in there because I think, there's certain images that, you know, if you saw like a Warhol or, a Rembrandt painting or whatever, I don't think you would have that same, they wouldn't have that same authority. And I think when you have religious images, you bring that believing gaze to it.
Yeah.
So they have a certain weight to them where you're not interrogating them in the same kind of way you do with other images.
Yeah.
And that believing gaze has a certain kind of authority to it where you internalize it, where it becomes like, oh, this is who this person is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an emotional impact.
Yeah, it's huge. And it starts from being, as a child, having an image held up and saying, this is who this person is.
Right.
And that you internalize that bias in a really profound and deep way.
Well, when I look at, in particular, the Mormon religion, it seems like their images are extra, like extra European and extra white. And it seems like they go out of their way to really stamp that image in. And it makes me wonder what we know now about history and what we know now about archaeology, and what we've discovered is that there's actually people that didn't look like that in Jesus's time, and they look completely different. Why then, knowing what we know now and knowing that these people probably didn't like that, do we hold on to these images?
Well, that brings me to another question I was going to ask you ladies. Does commerce play a part in this, right?
Is it tradition?
Tradition, but also what's going to make the most money, right?
True.
Does that have anything to do with this?
Yeah.
Sure. I think commerce and, again, that bias that exists, you know, that you buy into, or that you are, maybe more accurately, that you are sold.
Right.
And so that becomes part of like, oh, if this is what you believe is true, then that's what is replicated as true.
Right. Yeah. And that's where you're going to say, oh, I want to buy that because that reminds me of my childhood, the images I saw, you know, or what I believe based on the artwork that I've seen. That's kind of interesting. Now, Melissa has flip the script for us.
Reimagined it, and I love it too.
Yeah, you're giving many people an opportunity to make that connection. And that we had an episode on colorism. How does that impact you in terms of what you experienced in your training or anything like that?
I think colorism is one of the results of colonization.
Mm.
And the past always affects the future, so. Back then, the lighter skinned you were, the closer to God you were, because the closer to whiteness you were.
Mm.
And so Even with me growing up, I would get compliments like, oh, you're prettier for a black girl because you have a lighter skin complexion.
Now, when you looked at artwork, though, how did you feel? Did you feel like that you need to find some way to change that narrative? Because
What inspired you to start saying, you know what, I'm going to start creating these images that look different?
When I started to learn more history and I started to practice more self-love, I'm like, why do I think that I need to be white in order to go to heaven? Why do I think I need to be white to be successful or closer to whiteness? And I noticed a lot of my friends had that same problem. Like they wanted to marry a white guy. Mm. They wanted to have they wouldn't wear their natural hair if they were black because it wasn't appropriate or, you know,
it wouldn't
acceptable.
Lead them to success or something.
Yeah. And
it wasn't the standard of beauty.
It wasn't the standard of beauty.
Right.
And whiteness was the standard of beauty. And I'm like, that's not true. I knew that wasn't true. And I knew that images have a profound effect on the way you view yourself.
Images have an amazing effect. It's a billion, multi-trillion dollar industry of advertising that we live in, where we're constantly being bombarded with images. And why would we not think that religious images don't have an impact either?
Yeah. Go ahead, I'm sorry. And our brains work on subconscious archetypal programming. So anytime we see an image, we associate that image I'm trying to say this in the right way. We're associating, when we see an image, we try to internalize it and see ourselves in that image. And if we're being bombarded with the same images or negative propaganda about yourself or your skin color, over time, you are going to have self-hate or self-loathing for your culture.
That actually makes me think of the comment you made earlier about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It's a global church.
Yeah.
In fact, demographically, there are more people living outside the United States than inside the United States now.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the artwork, the media, is representative of that in the church? Is there progress being made? No.
Not at all. I think they're trying to make a little bit of progress, but I feel like you can't have just a toe in. Like, it's either you're all in or you're not. Mm. Because if you're propagating that you're a worldwide religion, you need to show the world in your artwork. Mm. And we need to be better at that. And
they are coming out with a new hymn book that actually includes music from all over the world. And it's been a long time coming, but it's on the way. And,
which is exciting.
I think that's a step
in the right direction.
Because the music can be pretty sleepy.
I know. It can be. And that's a Eurocentric cultural tradition, the soft music. And you can only feel the spirit.
Relating that to piety. And
that's one culture. There's so many different cultures who celebrate God in so many different ways and feel the spirit in different ways that we can't just have one. So it is a great step in the right direction.
Oh, yeah. In Mississippi, I wouldn't know what the calm stuff.
I think some of the ubiquitousness that comes from Mormon image making is a result of correlation, which was a kind of standardization of images and of churches that happens in the 1980s. That limited the amount of, like, this is the images you can have in a church to a set kind of gospel library. Mm-hmm. And that had, for sure, whether intended or not, a colonializing effect. There's a series of papers that have been done on research on it where, you know, you have like depictions of the international church, you know, from all around the world. And yet they have like the same sort of standard, like Harry Anderson kind of images in the background. And what does that kind of exportation of, it's not just whiteness, but it's like a singular whiteness, right? Mm-hmm. As defined by a set of like 30 images or as defined by a series of like a handful of male and pale artists, you know?
But I can tell you this from an insider's perspective, they are doing quite a bit of research and doing a lot of work.
The
LDS Church, right? The Church of Jesus Christ.
I'm the only non-LDS person up here.
Well, I'm just telling you because I've been in a lot of media. I've played a wise man in their nativity videos and things like that. And I've spoken to people who are doing research across the globe as with members of the church, and they are working to correct that representation and make it feel a little more inclusive. So there is work to be done, but at least they're putting their feet forward to do it.
Yeah, it needs to happen because it's something that's long overdue. I think a lot of churches need to be a little bit more inclusive when it comes to the images that they're using, because many of their members are non-white.
Yeah, so
around the world, they have members that are non-white.
Right, of course.
And their children are seeing this. And it reminds me, are you creating a children's book? Are you doing some of that work with some of the images that you have? Because you did some stuff that's non-male as well, correct?
Right, right. I'm curious about diversity in art, in religious or non-religious, is in terms of women, representation of women.
I like to explore the divine feminine and what that means. And I think as I started to practice self-love more and decolonize my mindset, I'm like, I want all women to feel that they are seen and that they're important, that they are divine, because they're not often represented in Christian art. And it's a problem. There's like a lot of self-loathing I've noticed, especially with darker women in all cultures. And I just want to change the narrative.
We'll get back to this conversation on roots, race, and culture in just a moment.
PBS Utah is also home to other dynamic podcasts. More Than Half covers some of the most challenging issues facing women in Utah and how it takes all of us to make change happen. Here's a clip from the episode, A Separate Space.
I don't think a lot of people realize that it's just not common for people of color, especially women of color, to see themselves in the stories that, you know, we're reading.
Subscribe to More Than Half wherever you get your podcasts.
And now back to Roots, Race, and Culture from PBS Utah.
We see things of like sort of looks like an Eve image, a nativity, black nativity. These kind of images, what does that speak to you, Laura, when you see this kind of representation of the female?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things I've been thinking about, there's this famous image by an artist named Catherine Opie called Self-Portrait Nursing, and she's a queer woman and is trying, the background, you know, is drawing on a Madonna kind of stereotype, like stereotypical Madonna imagery. Mm-hmm. And I think what she's trying to do is to say, I have a space here. I am allowed to exist here. Mm-hmm. And I think, Melissa, you're doing something very similar, which is to say, I exist here and I'm allowed to be seen, and that there is something at stake by making me invisible and by making my experience invisible.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, you're right. And I feel like now, especially more than ever, women who are artists can tell their own stories, where historically it was usually white male artists who were painting these cultures or these experiences that were not their experiences. Yeah, so that's... I think we can paint our own experiences and have it come from a direct source.
You know, I have to say, I feel like in any spiritual oriented artwork, it is probably more important to show inclusivity in that artistic space for me than any other, because you want everyone on this planet to feel like they can connect with God
everyone to feel that they have divinity within themselves and they don't need to change themselves to one ethnicity or one culture in order to be accepted. And
it's a powerful and important message.
It could turn people away. I know with me, it turned me away a lot. And it makes people not want to be a part of a religion because they don't feel like they're accepted. If they can't see something that they feel like they can connect to, they feel like, well, this is just a religion for a specific race. And it's not a religion for everyone, because I don't look like these people.
Yeah.
So why would I be attracted to that religion at all? Yeah. I know that's what happened with me. Mm. I mean, the Museum of Contemporary Art, do you guys do stuff that kind of highlights these type of artworks?
I mean, we don't show religious art as, you know, that's not one of our objectives, but mm-hmm. we do have a show up right now by a South Carolina artist named Charles Edward Williams called Black River. And he is exploring religion and race within his exhibition.
Is this at the museum now?
This is at
now?
The museum now, yeah. Great. And he's looking at the notion of radical forgiveness.
I think it's
a really powerful show, and I think when you can step out of those sort of loaded biases or outside of those colonial lenses that really have profound damage and profound impacts to who is allowed to speak and how they are allowed to speak or who is allowed to be seen, that there can be something really powerful.
I absolutely love that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it goes back to that kind of that feminist saying that you can't be what you can't see. Yeah. And I think I really like that. I think it's really powerful. On one hand, it's reductive because Melissa hadn't seen these images and she said, mm-hmm. I'm going to be seen, you know, and I think there's something really powerful.
And it has like a huge impact on children.
Yes.
Like the first thing they're reading and looking at, they internalize things as fact and what they're taught. And there's this experiment, I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but Dr. Kenneth Clark conducted this experiment in the 1940s with African Americans' children's self-perceptions when it comes to race and ethnicity. And they had a white doll and a black doll, and they had a black child and a white child look at the doll, and they asked these questions: what doll is pretty, what doll is going to be successful, what doll is more valuable.
I'm pretty sure we all know
the answers.
We know
how the children answered the questions.
We got a treat for you guys, because I want to hear more about that when you get back.
You know, I love that idea, radical forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's, and in the fine art world, you hear amazing words like that. But I just want to thank you ladies for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Amazing work.
Thank you.
I love your stuff.
Your work is phenomenal.
Where can we find it?
Right? You can find it on my website, Instagram, or Twitter. I just think it's important to tell everyone's stories, like you said, and represent everybody in our narrative, because we're not above each other.
Thank you. Yes. And Laura, tell us, if we want to go to see this amazing exhibit, how do we find it?
It's at the Utah Museum of Contemporary Art, which is located downtown in between the Salt Palace and Abravanel Hall, across the street from Nordstrom's, just downtown.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Nordstrom's is awesome.
Yeah. Sorry for the product placement there.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Roots, Race, and Culture.
Check out our website for even more content, including interviews with some pretty dope BIPOC business owners. You can find all that in a bag of chips at pbsutah.org/roots.
And you'd be doing us a solid if you told all your friends about our show. But until next time, y'all, we are out.